Welcome to the Fire Time Podcast, where it's never hot enough, slow is fast, and the way to win is to make it so stupidly easy to buy from you that there's no excuse not to. I'm your host, Tim Reed. And once again, I'm so excited to be here today. Welcome to the Fire Time Podcast. And for this week's episode, we have a really, really special episode to bring you. So last week, I went to the NCSG National Convention, and that's the National Chimney Sweep Guild. And this is a show that I have been to for the last 3 years, and it is an amazing, amazing trade show. The things that the NCSG has going on for it are incredible. And I first went to it in Las Vegas, and when I arrived, I didn't know what to expect because my background was mostly on the fireplace retail side. But over the last few years, as I started working with more and more chimney companies, I started to see how amazing these businesses are. And going to their trade show in Vegas blew me away. The sense of teamwork and camaraderie that they had was something that I had never witnessed before. I mean, I saw direct competitors meeting together to help each other out with the different areas of their business that they needed to work on. And there was such a sense of togetherness. It was incredibly inspiring. So all that to say, I was really excited for this year's show, which was in Orlando. And as I was getting ready to go out there, I was talking with Kenneth Walker, and Kenneth was on this show last year alongside of Gideon Honeycutt to talk about the market of the South, and in particular, how it's different than the rest of the North American market. Well, Kenneth had listened to my episode with Gideon just a couple weeks ago when we talked about the things that sales reps can be doing to give value to retailers. And as we were talking about that episode, Kenneth was saying how we should do a companion piece to it about how retailers can best take advantage of the value that sales reps can bring them. And Kenneth is someone who is delivering incredible value to his retailers, and so it sounded like it'd be a really, really good companion piece. Well, as we talked about it, it turned out that we were both going to be at the NCSG Chimney Show, and so I was like, dude, let's just do it here and in person as opposed to doing it over the internet when we're on separate sides of the country. But the problem was the timing of the show was really, really tight. My schedule was crazy. And literally the only time that we could record was first thing in the morning in my hotel room. And so literally I had just rolled out of bed, taken a quick shower when Kenneth was at my door. And so we set up a very makeshift podcast studio in the hotel room and we started to record. So as you listen to this episode, you will know that it was first thing in the morning based on my voice. And chances are you're probably going to hear the air conditioner that was right behind Kenneth. But either way, it was really cool to get to do this live, and it was absolutely worth the early hour and the tired voice. So with that said, I think there's some amazing things to take away in this conversation. If you're trying to figure out how to get the most out of your business, chances are you have a sales rep or two that can help you get there. And so this conversation is going to lay out specifically how you can leverage the value that they bring to the table. Joining me live from the 2024 NCSG Convention and Expo is Kenneth Walker, an independent rep at Firewalker Sales. Kenneth, thank you for coming to do this interview very early in the morning.
Thank you, Tim. We might have to rethink that next time.
I know. Well, we got our coffee here and some water, so I think my voice will improve as we go. But I'm really excited we could do this in person. We've been talking for a little bit about putting this interview together, and it just made sense that we were going to be in the same state at the same event. Like, let's just knock it out and do it. So thanks for being here, man. So you've been on before with Gideon. We had a conversation about what the market is like in the South versus other parts of the country. But this conversation is really kind of a response to the recent episode that we've had with Gideon Honeycutt. And Gideon came on and we talked about how sales reps can be delivering value to their retailers. And that's a really worthy conversation. But there's another side to the conversation as well, right? Like, sales reps need to deliver value, and many reps do. But dealers need to respond to what good sales reps are doing and pick up their end of the stick as well. And in the same way that there can be some sales reps that are maybe on the lazy side,
that are just kind of taking what's easy and not doing the deep work of making an impact and really improving their dealers. There are also dealers that are lazy and aren't taking advantage of the incredible help the reps are offering them. So I kind of want to jump into that conversation. And starting with you is really cool because you have a background as a hearth retailer, and I know that your heart is to help hearth retailers win. Can you talk a little bit about your background in the industry?
Absolutely. So when I got into the industry, it was totally by accident, working for who would become my father-in-law. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah. You know, so, but started working there temporarily, but became sales, started on the sales floor, moved into management. And what I found, and I guess it was by accident, but especially as a manager, I almost felt like my head was buried, you know, looking back on it. Because I just looked at it from my perspective with, like, there was, like, blinders on. It's like, whatever happened in my little area, okay, I'm all on it. But I had zero idea what was going on outside of my area. And what do you do with that? I mean, there's, especially now with the way that our industry is changing, I mean, I can even tell you, we went through 2015. I didn't even know that was the first step to the 2020 certifications.
Yeah.
That came and went. We didn't even know it.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's how buried we were. And once I came out here into the rep world, and that was a wonderful opportunity that just got dropped in my lap, an unbelievable one, that's when my eyes were open. Coincidentally, that's also when I started listening and found you in 2020.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, my gosh, there's a voice to the industry now. And, you know, where do we learn? Where does a dealer go to learn what else is going on? You know, and the first place I think that they should look is the reps.
Yeah.
You know, and I can tell you from that past experience, everything that we're going to talk about here, I did. Looking back, I know I made a lot of mistakes as a salesperson, as a rep, or as the manager, and everything that we're going to talk, this is a touchy subject. You and I talked about this, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's very touchy. So it's out of a place of concern that I'm bringing these up.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So. Yeah. No, that's really good context because, yeah, again, it goes back to, like, you know, in the book of Proverbs, it talks about how wounds from friends are better than kisses from enemies. And it's really the truth. And I think that goes to some of the value that a rep can provide. So one of the things that a rep can do is provide perspective. And I remember this from early in my journey, in my first sales job that I had, and I've mentioned this before, there were three sales reps in particular that were really influential in teaching me how to sell. Mm-hmm. And it was Kip Rimmons, Deb Hannig, and Ed Hozak. And those reps consistently were investing in me. They were teaching me the craft, and it took time, but I'm forever indebted to that investment that they made in me. And the reason they could do that is that they had perspective. They saw a lot of retailers. They understood what worked and what didn't work.
Oh, absolutely. Well, much like you, Tim, I had several reps that were influential to me too. But it wasn't until I became a rep that I realized that perspective that I was just talking about with the blinders of the dealer being on, well, those are removed. Not fully removed, but when you become a rep, my region stretches from Georgia all the way to Texas
and from Tennessee to Florida. You need to get on an airplane to your whole region.
You know, now, and when that happened, when I became a rep instantly, I have this huge region, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. So now I'm seeing how different dealers do things.
Yeah.
And my gosh, if you want to see perspective, just travel Florida. From North Florida to South Florida is vastly different, not to mention the rest of my territory. So it's just amazing to see that. But by seeing that, I can come back to a dealer in Arkansas or wherever and chat with you. And if you tell me some of your problems or challenges, it's like, well, hey, I know a guy in Atlanta that just faced that.
Yep.
This is what he did. Or a guy in Florida, he's doing this. And I'm not giving away anything, you know, to the dealer. I'm not going to give away numbers and stuff like that, obviously. But if it's something that can help somebody, I mean, like, you know, like everybody says, you know, the rising tide brings all the ships up. So mm-hmm. we're here to help. That's what a rep's job is.
Yeah, you know, and I feel like I mentioned this when you and Gideon were on together a while ago. When a dealer takes advantage of what a good rep has to offer, amazing things happen. One of the things I think that many retailers struggle with is they struggle with training and they struggle yes. with retaining people.
Yes.
And I know that like this is your cup of tea. Like how can someone like you or a rep help with this sort of thing?
Well, a good rep is usually very willing to come and spend time in your showroom and work with your people. That's what I want to do. And whatever you need, tell me, and I will work up a training. People want to ask me, what do you train on? Well, I'll train on whatever you need. I will build a training platform for you. Is it sales? Is it technical? Whatever you want, let's do it. But the problem or the challenge is getting it on the calendar. I'm willing to come early. I'm willing to stay late. Whatever you want to do, I'm there. But we got to put it on the calendar.
Yeah, and that can be hard sometimes. You know, there was true story. There was someone one time that said, "Tim, man, we love this sales training video that you sent us. The problem is that we can never watch it because we always get interrupted by a customer coming in."
Oh my gosh.
To myself, I was like, "Oh, well, couldn't you have the team come in early and watch it?"
Yeah.
And just like, yeah. like, I think that so many retailers miss the fact that like you can create a schedule.
Yeah. So again, everything that we're talking about is out of help here, people. Just please. I've quit doing trainings if it's not uninterrupted. And I know that sounds brutal, but
no,
I mean,
it sounds great.
I've done it. You know, I've done it, and then I'm in the middle of talking about a product, and then one of the sales, the doorbell dings, and then somebody gets up and walks off, and they got to go help the customer. And I understand that. I do. And then it happens again, and then there goes the second salesperson, and then like I'm left with one guy. And I'm like,
and then people come back and they're not focused.
Yeah, and they're in the middle of it, and it's like, well, where were we? Well, I was with this product with you, and this one with you, and I'm like, no, I'm just to the point. It's like, look, you want to come in? I'll be here at 5 a.m. if you want me to. I'll bring coffee and donuts. We're good. I'll stay till 10 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
But let's have dinner at your store. Let's bring in pizza, something, whatever. But it has to be uninterrupted because, like you said, you lose focus, and it doesn't matter if it's technical or sales. Or just some other kind of training of, you know, team building or whatever. It's got to be uninterrupted.
Yeah.
And I think the key to looking at it that way, especially for hearth retailers, is because, again, this was a struggle at the store I was at.
Because yeah.
I planned some of these as a dealer, as a manager, I planned some events, and they went south. And because it wasn't viewed as an investment – there is a difference in investing in your people and, oh, well, I'm closed and it's costing me money. If you look at it as an investment and you open later or close early for training,
yeah
you're going to lose some floor time and maybe some customers aren't going to come in there. Okay, I get that. Totally. But what's the other side of it? Like, you're going to have better trained yeah. personnel on your floor.
Yeah.
And I've got to throw this in here, and you know this is true too. Again, another touchy subject. But when I go to hearth retailers, this is what happens. It's like, when can I train? I don't know. When I go to chimney companies, they carve out a day yep. on the spot.
How long can you stay?
Yep. How long you want me here for? How long can you stay?
Yeah.
I actually just did training here. Now this in Orlando the other day, and I was at their store for a whole day. but again, very different. Unusual
yeah.
for that to happen. But sweeps, keep me there.
Yep. You know, one of the things that, as we've talked about, retailers struggling with is lack of a sales process. We were actually talking about this at dinner the other night, mm-hmm. that if we were to ask every hearth retailer in the United States, what's your sales process? I would guess that there would be very few, like less than 50, that could actually say, hey, here's our sales process. Step one, we do this. Step two, we do this. Step three, we do this. And I'm not even concerned about what those steps are.
Right.
But for most hearth retailers, the vast majority, maybe less than 50 is not fair, but for the vast majority of retailers, there's no defined sales process.
Correct.
And this is something that I think hurts retailers, and it's something that someone like you or a sales rep can give tremendous help with, right?
I completely agree. And as
now, and all 50 of those, I'm sure, are in your territory, right?
I will, again, as the manager, we did not have a sales process. I was never taught a sales process. I never even got that until, actually, that was the subject you were talking on. During COVID, when we were all locked up, yeah. And you were doing, I think, CBC, you did something with Jerry Eisenhower, and that's what you were talking about. It was a sales process. That was the first time I was exposed to that. But I can tell you that no, nobody has a sales process. And yes, I'm willing to come and work with you. I'm willing to, you know, take your people and let's do, just like you always talk about, let's do some sales training.
Yep.
Do you know how many times I've actually done that?
No.
I've done it once.
Are you serious?
I've done it once. And guess what? That was for the dealer I used to work for.
Oh.
Because I instituted it.
Yeah.
Do you know how many times I've been requested to do that?
How many?
Once.
Wow.
And it was not them. So, you know, that's a raw, honest truth.
Yeah.
That might sting a little bit, but I mean, I agree with you. From what I see, that is the best way to up your sales numbers.
Yeah.
And to help your salespeople is just put them on the spot. Let's roll through it.
Yep.
And I've been to some dealers, and that's what I do. I actually watch the sales process. When I come in, I do love to just sit and watch and kind of follow through and listen to the salespeople.
Yeah.
And this one particular dealer I was at, I know them very, very well. So I was listening to his sales pitch on something, and then I just let him finish, and he came back, and we sat down, and I just went over what he did. I was like, do you know what you did here?
Yep.
And went through it step by step, and he was like, oh, my gosh, I did, didn't I?
Yep.
Like, yep. I said, here's where you went through all of this, and then you hit a roadblock, and you had to completely pivot and go to a different product.
Yes.
But if you had gone back and just actually understood the problem, you wouldn't have had to do that. And he's like, you're right. I'm like, that's all, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny with sales process. I was similar to you for a long time. I'd been in the industry for a long time and I knew how to sell. Like I said, like I had sales reps teach me personally how to sell. And there was some amount of success with that. But where it changed, where the process became really necessary was when I had to train people on my team, because I couldn't take all the raw information in my head that had taken a decade or more to kind of coagulate. I couldn't take that and just give it to this new person that was hired.
Yeah.
I had to put it into steps. That was what kind of gave birth to it. And one of the things I think about, though, is like there's a rule that me and Matt Bradley talk about all the time in our industry, and it's salespeople will most often take the path of least resistance, even if that means selling nothing. And that can be harsh, but I've seen that. Like as I've secret shopped a number of retailers across the country over the last, you know, 3 to 5 years, and in most situations, the salesperson hands me a business card and tells me to go take measurements and come back. Mm-hmm. And that's the path of least resistance because it's easy. It doesn't require anything of you. It makes the customer go do the work. It's like vetting the customer to make sure they're serious without realizing like, no, they drove into the store. Like they're serious, you know?
Yep.
So all that to say, can you talk about the value of like of sales practice or observing sales? Like what do you gain like by having the team just practice? Like, you know, in your case, you rep Valor and Blaze King and other things, but like, hey guys, let's practice this. Someone's walking in the store. I'm trying to sell a Blaze King. Let's go. Like, what do you gain from doing that?
Well, I mean, it gets you more comfortable without even knowing it. I mean, it's, you've said before, it's incredibly, incredibly awkward the first times you're doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's understood because you feel like you're acting.
Yep,
and
spotlight's
on
you.
In a way, you kind of are.
Yep.
But if you can get all of that uncomfortableness out up front, you know, then you're also not caught off guard when somebody throws you a curveball.
Yeah.
So it's – I was in the military for a while, and we had a saying, and you use part of it. You know, you always say – but our saying was, slow is smooth, smooth is fast.
Hmm.
Which means – and we also have a thing called crawl, walk, run.
Yes.
So you got to start slow, which is the crawl phase. And then as you get better, you go to walk. So now you pick up your pace a little bit, and you're going – well, then – well, now when it's smooth, then you can run.
Wow.
Because it's muscle memory. So it's like, that's why slow is smooth, smooth is fast.
Wow.
So that is very, very true when it comes to sales. And that's why I think it is important to do that. You know, take a moment and just slow it down.
Yeah.
One salesperson could, like, take that whole hour.
Yeah.
Don't rush them. Just work through it because they're probably nervous.
Yep.
But I'd rather them be nervous with me or the sales manager of that store or somebody and practice as opposed to being under the gun.
Yes.
That's how I was trained. It was like, hey, follow this salesperson around and listen to what they say. And I did that for like a couple of days. And it's like, okay, here you go.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, crap. Yep.
Me and my friend Daniel Hammer, we talk about this where for many of us in the industry that have like made it through the gauntlet, it's almost like, you know, you get thrown in the rapids and you're going through the rocks. You don't have a boat. You're trying to swim. Most people don't make it. A few of us do, but most people don't make it. And while for those of us that do make it, you know, it does build some fortitude and the ability to think on your feet. It's not an effective way if you want to get the most people, across the river safely.
Give them the boat.
Yeah, that's right.
And let's start out in the boat.
Yeah.
And then if you fall out of the boat, you know how to get back in the boat. You know? So, but it's sorely lacking at probably most everywhere. For hearth retailers, and it's something that's hard to put into place. I get it. And I think something that we have to remember is we're not trying to clone that one person.
That's right.
Because that can't happen.
That's right.
And as I, you know, I couldn't, like you said, I couldn't take myself and just teach everybody else exactly how to do it just like me and be it, you know, and I was the leading salesperson when I was there. I can't do that. You have to be willing to accept that the next person is not going to do it exactly like you are. That goes to techs and everything else too. You know, you might be a wonderful tech in the field, but that doesn't mean that every single tech is going to do it exactly like you do.
Yep.
And you have to be comfortable with that.
Yep.
But it's always challenging, of course.
Yeah. And I know we're going really deep on sales training and practice. I want to circle back to the fact that your reps can help you with this, you know?
Absolutely.
As a retailer, I mean, and dude, like, you are busy and you're being pulled in a million different directions, but if you've got a trusted rep, like, literally, like, if you were my rep, I would be like, Kenneth, can you please be on rotation? Like, every 4 weeks, every 6 weeks, every 8 weeks, whatever you can give me. I just want you to always come in on, like, the first Thursday of the second month, and you've got 3 hours and just train my team. And like, because then it's off my plate. Like, I don't have to think about it. And that's where I think there is so much value that a rep can bring with the consistency of like, hey, we're not going to get it all the first time.
No.
But hey, I'm going to be back and we're going to do it again. We're going to do it again. Get a little bit better. And I mean, just, you know, when we say, all right, guys, let's jump into some sales practice here. I'll start out as the salesperson. Hey, you be the customer. Let's go. And like, there is so much power when a rep steps up to the plate and is like, let me show you how to do this. Like, I think it's amazing.
Yeah. You're very right. And I would love somebody to tell me that and say, hey, I want you here and in these intervals or whatever, because that actually would let me plan my trips out better. Because the first thing I was taught by my sales manager, Art Sewell, who has since retired.
Yeah.
But everybody in our region knows Art Sewell. So anyway. First thing he told me is like, if you go to a dealer, because you better have a reason to be there.
Mm-hmm.
As Gideon said, don't go drop off pins. I don't care about all that stuff. You know,
I've got this great new calendar.
Yeah, we don't care about that. Have a reason, whatever it is. But and that's a perfect reason to go.
Yeah,
it's like, hey, I'm going to come. I'll be there at 7 o'clock in the morning. We'll run through some sales training, and then I'll go over some new products with you, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing that I think that actually allows you to do is to just talk to the rep about their perspective. It's not sales training and all that is incredibly important, but it's also about the perspective of what they're out seeing and what is happening out there.
Yeah.
Because there's other things. This industry's changing, people.
Yep.
Whether you like it or not.
Hey, this is when you said that, it triggered something for me. Can we pivot and talk about showrooms?
Sure.
I think one of the most valuable things that a rep can help with is showrooms.
Yes. I agree.
Yeah, talk about this, because you see the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Exactly. So that was another shocking thing for me, is just the range of what the showrooms look like, how big they are, how small they are, how many product lines are in a showroom, if they needed a revamp or not. And, you know, I think we were in the situation too. Like, when I was the store manager, we vastly needed an update, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was never able to get to that point. But when they did, because now my brother-in-law is running that shop, well, guess what? He called me. He was like, hey, I want to go see some showrooms.
Oh, yes.
He said, I want to go see some showrooms. Now, he was specifically interested in showrooms and particularly for Valor, because he was really big into Valor. So I made some phone calls. And I was like, all right, we're going to go to a few places. And we went on a road trip, just he and I. And we went and looked at showrooms. And I even went outside my region. I called other reps that I'm friends with and said, hey, I don't want to tread on your territory, but can I come up here? I'm bringing my brother-in-law, my dealer. He wants to see some showrooms. And they're like, yeah, come on. And we went in and just toured showrooms.
Wow.
And it just blew my mind too, going to some of these places. But yes, use your rep as a resource to see what you need to do for your showroom.
Yeah.
Because guess what? I don't care if they're not a good designer or whatever. That's not why you're using them. What do you see? What are people putting in? How many different brands are people putting on the floor? Are they doing 10? Are they doing 3? What's effective?
Yeah.
What are the new things coming out? How are they utilizing their space? Now, that's a huge one. Obviously, every showroom's different. But how are they utilizing their space? Do they have support poles running everywhere? Because you really need to hide those. Mm-hmm. Those need to be built into an enclosure. Because now it's impeding flow when you walk through. How is the flow? And I'm not getting all into what you talk about as, you know, signage and all that. But that's part of it too.
Yeah.
It's like, how are you organizing it? You know, and nobody asked me that.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't. And I've got a little basic program on my computer that allows me to do layouts and stuff.
Wow.
So, and I've done that for a few people, and I'm like, hey man, I can lay out your showroom. I just need your dimensions. Measure off your place, send it to me, and let's have a discussion about what we got. And I can just lay out a general thing. I'm not saying you have to use it, but at least it gives you a bird's eye view of looking down. You know,
that is so good.
And I did it with one company. They're actually here this weekend, but I literally went in, and they had a small showroom or a small area. We went in. She was sitting on the other side like you are from me right now.
Yeah.
And I had a second monitor, turned it around, and we literally built their showroom right in front of her.
It's perfect.
And she's like, that's cool. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, so valuable, because, I mean, it's like you can either do it yourself without perspective. You can hire someone for a ton of money to come in, or you can talk to a trusted sales rep that sees all kinds of showrooms.
Exactly.
And you can do it together. And this is where I think...
Yes.
I think that many retailers have an arrogance that they're the smartest, I understand what's going on, and I have to reinvent the wheel for every single part of my business. And the truth is that you don't. You know, like, no one in our industry is the smartest person in the world.
No.
Like, we're not, you know.
No.
I mean, one of the core values of our company is seek innovation wherever we can find it.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that we can't be so arrogant as to think I'm the only one that can come up with innovation. It's like, dude, if I see the janitor mopping the floor and there's something about that that's better than the way that I do it, I gotta be humble enough to say, hey, there's innovation wherever I can find it, you know. And that's the thing with sales reps is I imagine it's frustrating when you have insight to offer, whether it's sales process, whether it's help with a showroom, whether it's something to do with keeping employees or team members or installers, and a dealer is just, no, I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to reinvent the wheel myself. And you just see them banging their head against the wall. I feel like that's got to be really frustrating.
Yeah, it is. It's frustrating to see anybody facing a challenge that you have already faced or that you have watched or helped other people go through and not being able to help them. I mean, that is just the worst feeling to anybody with a heart anyway, not being able to help somebody that needs help. And I think some of it could be, you know, just I was the same way. Like, I thought I had everything figured out.
Yeah.
You know, as a manager. I didn't. And I didn't take advantage of all of the tools that were in front of me. And sales reps, the perspective that they have is, you can't beat it.
Yeah.
And it's free.
Yes.
It's free.
My friend Grant, he says that he literally has a list of like four reps that he'll just call every 6 to 8 weeks. And he'll just call and just say, what are you seeing out there?
There you go.
What's happening in the market?
There you go.
And like, he'll grill him because he's like, I'm not going to visit 50 retailers. I don't have that perspective. So even if he disagrees with what they're saying, he's calling them.
Yeah.
Hey, what are you seeing? What's working? What's not working? Like, I mean, what a valuable resource to have at your fingertips.
Well, and I remember talking to one rep years ago, and he came in, and he's retired now, but he was one of the main ones that always came in. We had good conversations. And he came in, and we were talking, and I asked him specifically about what else is going in other regions, not in our little city, but other areas. And it even got into the discussion of, hey, we're looking at bringing in this stove line. Well, he happened to have that certain stove line separate from everything else he was doing. Mm-hmm. And he had a candid conversation with us. And he's like, I've got two companies. One here, they were within driving distance of each other. This one sells this brand. This one doesn't. He goes, this one sells more. And he actually said, I don't think you should bring it in. It was his line.
Wow.
And he's like, I don't think it fits you. And we're like, wow. So he was essentially, from a rep perspective, he was turning down potential business.
Yep.
But at the same time, he was looking at it with an honest heart, saying, this isn't for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good rep.
Yep.
And he wasn't protecting anybody. I want to throw that in. It wasn't like he had another dealer selling this and he's trying to protect them from us. No.
Yep.
You know, we could have done it, but it actually could have hurt us.
Yep.
You know, and that's what you can get with a good rep, like you said, though, if you trust them and you have a good, strong. And I have a couple – I have some strong bonds with some certain dealers, stronger than others.
Oh, yeah.
I talk to people about other brands all the time, and I'm going to give you an honest feedback.
Yep.
You know, and I even have people that will call me occasionally with – and I'll answer technical questions or whatever as long as I can if I'm familiar with that stuff, even if it's not mine.
Yep.
We'll get back to our conversation with Kenneth Walker in just one second. Hey, if you were at the 2024 HPB Expo, then you know we just launched our third edition of the Fire Time Journal. Now, every year for the last 3 years at the time of the HPB Expo, we have released a printed journal that's about 150 pages long, and it's based on the 8 departments of a hearth retailer. Now, we gave this away to tons of people at the trade show, but if you missed out and want to get a copy of it, we want to make that available to you as well. To get your copy of the 2024 Fire Time Journal, you can go to the website, itsfiretime.com/journal, and you can go ahead and order one. Now, when you go to the website, you'll see that you can also order either of the journals from the last 2 years. So as long as supply lasts on those, you can order all three if you've missed out on all of them or any of the ones that you didn't get. Over the last 3 years at the trade show, every single year without fail, someone comes to get one of these journals and literally tells me, this is one of the main reasons I flew out to this trade show, is to get this journal. So don't sleep on this content. It is absolutely fantastic. I'm really honored to be a part of putting this out because the contributors who write these articles are absolutely incredible. So if you missed out on your copy of the Journal of the Trade Show or you want to order some from your team, just go to the website, itsfiretime.com/journal, and order yours today. That's itsfiretime.com/journal.
Yeah, that's good. And that goes to one of the things that you mentioned you want to talk about, which is loyalty. Yeah. And I guess I'd love to tee you up with this because I think that this is really, really true.
Yeah. So I think loyalty is huge. I always tried to be loyal to all the brands that were that we had, especially the ones that took care of us.
Yeah.
And I have to say, due to this, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now if it wasn't for one rep back in the day. And that was Paul and Melanie Dill. They happened to be the Valor reps before I became a Valor rep.
Oh, okay.
But they actually came in to our store. We weren't selling anything. We weren't selling hardly any direct mints at that point. It was all vent free. And they came in and they took time and invested into us and taught me about that product. And I never would have dreamt that tables would have turned and now I would be the rep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was Paul that did it. Paul and Melanie that did that for me and showed us that. And we went from nothing to being one of the largest in the region.
Yeah.
They're still, that dealer is now still one of my largest dealers. But if Paul and Melanie had not come in and invested in me, and I consider them friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was very loyal to them. They were loyal to us. My dealer is still now very loyal to Valor. That's loyalty because it was an investment. And I wouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, I think sometimes dealers can get wrapped up in wanting lots and lots of different lines.
Yeah.
And I tried that. I remember going to Expo the first time and like I was blown away and I was getting brochures and we went back and I was going through everything trying to figure out what we could add to the floor and, you know, just blow it out. And of course, we work with distributors, so we already have access to all these different things.
Yeah.
Like, let's put it on the floor. And then I realized also I was the guy that was now the subject matter expert. And I'm trying to keep up with all these different lines.
Yeah.
And it's impossible.
Can't do it.
You can't do it. And if you have the ability to have a huge showroom and have, you know, tons and tons of product on the floor, that's awesome, especially depending on your market.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to have the subject matter experts behind it. And I think it's better to, kind of like you talk about with, you know, good, better, best, you have a handful of products that you are extremely loyal to you and they are loyal to you.
Yeah.
And then work with that. And that's actually a lot of the dealers that I have the most success and that they have the most success is not a, you know, not a buffet.
Yep.
But, you know, tone it down a little bit and they do fantastic.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. I know what it's like to work for retailers that are just trying to lock product lines down to block out competitors. And I think that when reps don't understand the market, they might just go to the biggest retailer to try to get their product in. But, I mean, once you get past, I mean, honestly, even like two major lines, everything else starts to get so diluted unless you're really intentional with like, well, we're going to bring in part of this line and part of this line because there's no reason for anything. And there's so much overlap. When me and Grant go to do consulting trips to go help a retailer, if we're looking at a market, we'll research different companies in the market that are the competitors of that retailer. And truly, the more lines that a company has, usually the weaker they are. Because, and I don't care how many sales they do, they might do a lot of sales, that's fine, but they're not experts at any of them. They don't know why they've got brand X over brand Y. They just know that they've got a bunch of lines. So when you can go to a retailer that maybe has less overall lines, but you can say, I can make you an expert in this, and this is why this product is here. Yeah. This is why this other product is here. And this is how these brands work together. Like, it's really powerful. And again, this is what sales reps can do, is like,
yes,
they can make your team experts in it. It's not more products that's the answer. It's expertise in the products that you have.
Absolutely. And that's, I don't go into a market looking for the biggest dealer. I go in looking for a dealer that wants to work with us and partner with us. And you've met Steve Hagsman. He has that same philosophy. You know, Valor has that same philosophy, that we want a partner in the business. And I kind of take that, even before I realized that that was their way of doing it, that's kind of how I look at it across the board. I want a partner. This is a two-way street, because that kind of goes back to the loyalty part too. It's like, okay, for some of the dealers that do want everything and grabbing lines, okay, you've got my line. What are you going to do with it?
That's right.
Because at the end of the day, this is a two-way street.
100%.
Like we both have to make some money here.
Yep.
So it means you need to sell my product. I will do anything and everything that I can to help you sell my product.
Yes.
Whatever you need, call me. But it has to work both ways. You know, Dave Ramsey says, like, a good deal is good for both parties, the seller and the buyer.
Yes.
You know, and if it's not, then that's not a good deal.
Yes.
So, and honestly, if you can't move my product, okay, then let's talk, because maybe it's not a best fit.
That's right.
And that's not out of a place of malice. That's just saying, hey, maybe this isn't a good fit for both of us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I saw that often, again, working for companies in the past that would take on product lines strategically to maybe block out a competitor, but they weren't that serious about it. And it's like, well, you know, if you take on the product, that manufacturer, that distributor is trusting you with an investment. And they're being loyal to you, because they could go set up other people down the street. They could go sell it on the internet, but they're trusting you to help grow that investment. And like you said, when a sales rep says, hey, like, I will help you every step of the way. You want me there at 5 a.m? I'm there at 5 a.m. You want me to go out with a service tech? I'm going out with a service tech. I'll do it. But we have to grow this thing.
Yep.
And if we're not growing it, I've got to look at taking it somewhere else. In the same way, if a retailer's got a salesperson on the showroom floor that doesn't sell that well, doesn't work on getting better, and isn't producing results, well, the dealer in good conscience has to say, I'm going to try to help you.
Yes.
But if it gets to a point where you ignore my help, or you actually can't do it, we have to talk about making a decision to go a different direction. And so many dealers are like, well, they pulled the line from me, or they, you know, they set somebody else up down the street. And it's like, I get it. And me and Gideon have had that conversation about, there's reps that don't make the investment in their dealers. But there are also situations where the rep has to make the call of like, look, this isn't good for anybody.
Yeah.
And that's not the rep's fault.
No, it's not. And, you know, I'm a Dave Ramsey guy. I think you kind of are too.
Yep.
And if you've ever read the book, Entree Leadership.
Yes.
What you just said is what he covered. It's like, look, you give, in this case, you give the salesperson, or what you were talking about, give the salesperson, give them the opportunity to succeed. And if they don't, you first have to look at yourself and say, as the leader.
That's right.
And say, okay, what tools did I not give you? You know, what, put it on yourself first. What else do you need? And exhaust your toolkit.
Yep.
You know, and that's the grace part. It's like, okay, I'm going to give this guy grace. They haven't done what they're supposed to do. What did I not do as the leader to help you?
Yes.
Now, that only goes so far. It comes to a point, and he talks about it in that book. It's like, once that has been exhausted, you have to look at it and say, okay, is this person operating out of their strengths? If they're not, you need to find them another place.
Yep.
Now, I'm not saying fire them, but maybe there's another role that they could do. Maybe sales just isn't their thing. It's the same thing for us. And the same thing for me. Dealer, have I given you everything that you need to succeed?
Yeah.
And that's, again, that's training. That's me coming in. That's me being present with you and working. Okay, but if we've exhausted that, okay, what's the next role here? Like, I'm out of my toolkit's empty.
Yeah.
So that's the hard,
hard
position to be in.
Well, and I think I learned this the hard way, but you can't out-coach a motivation problem. You can't. And again, there are many hearth retailers that have a motivation problem. There just are. There's many hearth retailers that are too busy to invest in their people. They're too set in their ways to create a schedule, have a training program, have a sales process, look at other businesses to see what they can be learning from it. Now, this is not everybody, but there are many businesses that are in that boat. And as a sales rep, it's like, well, yeah, I can't, there's nothing I can do to help you when you don't want to make your team better. And this is where, as a community of retailers, we can open up our eyes and say, okay, yeah, like where can I learn? Where can I get better? And there are people that are doing that. And those are the folks that are really making a difference in our industry.
Yeah.
But it goes back to the fact that when a dealer has a good sales rep at their disposal, the rep can be a superpower to get this stuff done. And I guess as we close out, right before we started recording, you gave me a threefold framework of what a dealer can be doing to take advantage of all their rep has to offer. And I'd love for you to take us out by going through this, because I think this is incredible.
Yeah, so I kind of think it's a very basic and simple framework, and almost too basic. But it's evaluate, plan, and execute. And what I mean by that is, first off, is the hardest part. It's evaluate yourself. And when I say this, it has to be a raw and honest evaluation, specifically your weaknesses. So as a dealer, where am I weak? Is it my showroom? Is it the sales process? What is it? And I would also start from, I'm going to go back to Dave Ramsey here too, and kind of the debt snowball thing. Start with the smallest problem.
Yeah.
What's the easiest thing to knock out? Okay. Sales process. Because that's easier to do in a way than having to revamp the showroom.
Because most dealers, they could make a sales process really easily because they likely have the steps inside of themselves. They just got to document it.
Yeah, exactly. So but evaluate yourself. Where's your weak points? And then write those all down. The second thing you have to evaluate are your reps. Who's your good reps? Now, one rep might not be able to answer everything that you need help with, but identify the ones that can and strategically go to those reps, because that's the second process. Once you've identified the reps, then there's the plan or the consultation. That's where you bring your reps in and talk with them. And it's like, okay, I've done some honest work here on myself and really evaluated myself, and here are my weaknesses. How can you help me?
Yeah.
It's my showroom. Okay, awesome. I've got five different showrooms within a 2-hour drive of here. Can you carve out time and we're going to go look at showrooms? They're non-competing dealers. I can clear it with the owners to come in and show you their stuff. And we're just going to look at what they do, what works for you, what doesn't. Or like I talked about earlier, let's draw something out. Let's just put it on paper and come up with a long-term plan, Sales process, cool. Can I come in next week? Whatever. Come up with a plan. And then the last and probably the most difficult part, and the part where a lot of people stumble, is execution.
Yeah.
Because now it's real. When it comes to that point, okay, it's the other stuff's easy. It's all paperwork.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Okay, we can do that, right? Everybody can dream and all that. Execution. That means committing to doing it. And for a retailer, I think the first thing that comes into our minds, because again, I was that guy. It's like, well, that's going to take my sales guys off the floor. Yes, it will. But it's the price you pay. You are going to pay for whatever you do one way or the other. You're either going to spend money and do it right up front. And money can be in the form of training, paying somebody to come in or whatnot. Or you're going to do it in time. And usually when you do it in time, it's by your mistakes. Because I learned a lot because of my mistakes.
Yep.
That's a painful way to learn. So do it right the first time, but go ahead and bite the bullet and carve out the time, open late, close early, whatever, and bring somebody in and do the training or whatever you need. And it will pay off at the end. It really will, because your sales are going to go up. Like, your whole business is going to go up. And it's changing the atmosphere that is there. And I think it gives the salespeople a little bit of breathing room instead of being covered.
Yeah.
And that's different from market to market. But, I mean, you can get buried. You're from the Northwest. You know that. Like, that's a heart mecca up there. Vastly different from the South.
Yeah.
But we can get buried down here, too.
Yeah, as you say that, the execution piece, I think, is where the rep brings so much value, right? I mean, it's all of it. But I know a lot of companies that they can try to put together the plan and then it just dies on the vine. And so they try to put together another plan and then it dies on the vine. And execution is the difference between success and failure. And it just goes back to like, man, if you've got like a couple amazing reps, put them on rotation, whatever it looks like with their schedule demands, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it is. And I'm just imagining like, if let's just say that you want to invest in your people better as a business owner. The rep can come in and help you schedule one-on-one meetings with your salespeople. The rep can come in and help you create the monthly schedule for the showroom. I mean, there's so many things. I know that that's not like directly impacting the products that rep has, but I think in a roundabout way it is, because it's building trust with a rep who's helping you run a better business. And that will come back in some way, shape, or form in sales to that company. But where a dealer struggles with execution, well, perfect. Like, have the rep be the one that's the accountability police to help you with that. I mean, to me, that's like, it's like having a virtual assistant almost.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I'm going to throw something else out on top of that. Dealers also need to realize, like, us reps, we don't operate in a vacuum. Like when we're at events like this, guess what? I'm buddies with Jeff Jones, completely different company. He works for RPG. You know, I know other reps and we're friends. So, you know, if I don't have the answer to something, you know, there's other reps out there, and there's also reps that I'm good enough friends with them that I'm not concerned about the competitiveness. Yes, we're competitors. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt we're competitors. But we can also work together. And I think that's key. That's a really good way to hopefully close this out, is that this industry has to work together. And you're a big advocate for that. You know, we have to come together and find community. I'm pretty certain, at least in my area, multiple reps would be willing to come in, even at the same time, possibly, and work on different things, because we have different strengths.
Yeah.
So, you know, talk to all your guys about that, but execution is the key. And if I had one word to encompass all of this, it still goes back to perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Look to somebody who has a larger perspective than you do. So you, Tim, have a larger perspective than I do, because you're looking at it from a national view. So you're seeing different things. So you've helped me. You've helped, you know, us this week, you know, have a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's amazing. Like, there's strengths at all levels like that. There's advantages to having a national perspective. There's advantages to having a regional perspective. And of course, as the retailers, the business owner, there's advantages you have because you do know your business unlike anyone else. And each one of those has a place in the conversation. But we need to be working together and using the resources available. As we close out, the thing I'm reminded is that Tim Rethlake has told me, if you're going to pick up one end of the stick, you have to pick up the other as well. Many retailers complain about bad sales reps, or about, if only I could hire better people, if only my people sold more. Okay, I get it. If you're going to complain and you're going to pick up that end of the stick, well, the other end of the stick is that you probably have some reps that can help you with this, that can train, that can invest in your people, but you got to engage them to do it. If you're going to pick up one end of the stick, you got to pick up the other two. And I think the word to retailers is, take advantage of that or stop complaining. Because if you're not willing to engage the folks who can help you for free, then I don't know what there is to complain about. So, man, this has been such a good conversation, and I think it's a perfect complement to the one that we had just a few weeks ago with Gideon. So thanks a ton for being here, man. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome, Tim. Glad to.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation with Kenneth Walker. I know you heard in my voice how early in the morning it was, but man, I think there was some really, really good stuff there. And if you're listening to this in real time, you might be thinking to yourself, whoa, like, this convention just ended a couple days ago. And, you know, that's true. I turned this episode around really, really fast. Number one, to make sure this came out around the time of the NCSG convention, but also because I think that while we've been having conversations recently about building a framework of sales management and about how reps can step up and perform better, I thought that having this piece about what retailers can be doing to perform better and take advantage of what good sales reps have to offer was worth putting out right in this same timeline. Now, looking over my notes from the conversation, if you're a retailer that is wanting to grow and make the most out of your relationship with reps, I think that what Kenneth said about no interrupted trainings is absolutely huge. I can remember times where I've been part of a training and the phone rings and me or someone else goes to pick it up, so everything goes on hold. And then one person comes back and you try to keep going, but you know, you have to catch them back up, and it's just not a good situation. And so what I would say to do is, when you schedule trainings with your sales reps, either one of two things: either number one, do it before you open or after you close. And that can be painful, but if this only happens every 4 to 6 weeks, it's not that big of a deal. So do it when the business is closed, and that way your full focus can be on the training. But the other thing is, designate one person to be the one who answers the phones or who talks to customers, and let them handle it and not be a part of the training. And while the training is going on, make sure it's somewhere that customers cannot see, so that they're not trying to say, hey, can that person help me? No, you got to keep the training area separate from where customers are. You know, the next thing I thought about as I was listening to Kenneth was the idea of viewing this time as an investment. So really, when you are training your team, this is an investment that will make you more and more and more money as time goes on. And if you think about what's more valuable, say 45 minutes that a team member could be hanging out waiting for a customer to come in, or 45 minutes with a really good sales rep doing sales practice or learning the technique of selling one of your products. I mean, that's something that can make you money time and time and time again. So when it comes to training with your sales reps, make sure that you protect this, because this is valuable. It's an investment in the future of your business, and it's something that should be taken seriously. Now, I get it. Not all reps are great. So I'm not saying to protect time like this if the sales rep is not particularly great. But what I would say to that is, don't schedule sales trainings with reps that aren't particularly great. Schedule training with the sales reps that give you value and are helping your team get better. And, you know, I would say too, just because a sales rep is new or a rep is young does not mean that they don't have something to teach your team. So be generous with that and carve out time for it. I also thought that Kenneth's idea about road tripping to see showrooms is just incredible. I mean, if you are considering in any way a showroom renovation or remodel, I bet that one of your sales reps can find you 3 to 5 businesses to go and take a look at. And like Kenneth said, chances are they might even go with you. But if you can do something like that, travel with one of your reps, you're going to be able to see what works. And what I've found for me is, just anytime you can step out of your business, things start to become clear. And just think about what you would learn if once a year or twice a year you went on a tour to visit retail showrooms that had similar products to yours. And this is something that I'm sure some of your good sales reps can set up for you. Now, in closing, when Kenneth talked about the threefold strategy of evaluate, plan, and execute, that's something that's really, really wise if you're able to take advantage of it. First off is evaluate. Now, so many retailers are just running around like chickens with their heads cut off. And I get it, because there is a lot that is going on in business. But the thing that I'll say is, when we choose not to make time to evaluate our experience and our leadership it's amazing how we miss out on the things that can help us grow. And if you have trusted sales reps around you, they can be someone to help you evaluate what's going on in your business and see it for what it is. Now, after we evaluate, we understand what is going on in our business. We can see things as they are. After that, we plan. And we can put together the steps of where do we want to grow to. Again, this is something a trusted sales rep can help you with. They've seen retailers that are successful. They've seen salespeople that are good. So think about, where do I want to go, and make a plan to get there. And after that, it's time to execute. Now, this is really, really difficult. Execution can be very, very hard. And what I've found for myself is that I will often involve other people in my life to help me execute, because left to my own devices, I simply wouldn't do it. In my previous job, when I was managing multiple showrooms out here in the Pacific Northwest, there was a woman who was on staff, and she was the executive assistant of the owner of our company, and she was just incredible at what she did. And what I would do is I would book a standing appointment with her every 3 months to help me plan all the meetings that I had to plan over the next quarter. And so this would be a combination of our team meetings, the monthly one-on-ones I'd have to have with the various people that were on my team, times to check in with my boss, any kind of a standing meeting that I needed to have, I would have her meet with me to help me schedule it. Now, the reality is I could have scheduled all of this on my own, but I knew that if she wasn't there with me and I wasn't accountable to do this with someone else, I'd put it off and put it off and put it off. And that's what I found in my life time and time again, is that by bringing in outside people around me, I can execute in ways I never thought possible and with incredible consistency. And this is where I would say, bring in your best sales reps. I mean, what are the things that you need to do to execute your plan? Are there checkpoints where you can have a sales rep be an accountability partner for you to make things better and keep moving the ball forward in your business? I think that there is a lot there in that conversation that companies can take away. I know for me as a retailer, like I said early on, there were some trusted sales reps that I wanted to take full advantage of because they were huge assets to helping me get better and helping my people get better too. Well, hey, if this podcast today was a blessing for you and you want to support this show financially, you can do that by going to the website patreon.com/itsfiretime. That's patreon.com/itsfiretime. And the takeaway from this is, if you're a retailer listening, who are the sales reps in your corner that can deliver value like this and help you grow your business? Once you know who they are, I would recommend getting them on rotation to train your people and to meet with you and formalize it again, like, you know, the second Tuesday of every other month, whatever it looks like, but make it something that you don't have to think about it. It's just in the books and it's part of your rotation. If you're listening to this and you're a sales rep and you're thinking, why have I not been able to make a connection and break through with my dealers? Well, my guess is that if you approach things the way that Kenneth does, I think that you're going to start to see some payoff with that. It doesn't mean they're going to listen. Retailers can be fickle. Retailers can be lazy. And I get that. I mean, in the same way that, you know, sales reps can. But what I would say is that by starting with the heart to serve and the plan to help your dealer grow, over time, you will gain immense credibility with that retailer and be given opportunities to help them solve more problems, which often means buying product from you. So I think that for both retailers and sales reps, there's something in that conversation. So with that said, I hope you guys have an amazing rest of your week. We will talk again very soon. Thank you for listening to the Fire Time Podcast. To learn more, visit the website itsfiretime.com. Music from this episode was written and recorded by In Bloom out of Portland, Oregon. We thank you for listening to the Fire Time Podcast, where it's never hot enough, slow is fast, and the way to win is to make it so stupidly easy to buy from you that there's no excuse not to. We'll see you next time. All in to burn.